4,000 kilometers of combined testing, 3 days of practice, all for the two Red Bulls to take row number one. Max Verstappen and Red Bull start as they mean to go on with a front row lockout in Bahrain. Welcome to episode 261 of Grid Talk. Today we are here to discuss qualifying for the Bahrain Grand Prix. My name is Owen Medford, and joining me we have F1 historian Alex Booth.
Hello.
Jawad from the Hit the Apex podcast.
Hello.
And Grid Talk co-host Tom Downey.
Aloha.
Just before we get into the show, if you enjoy this podcast, we would love it if you could take five to leave us a five-star rating on Spotify or a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're one of the 72% of people who aren't yet subscribed to the channel, please consider helping us out with a like and subscribe. So as I say, Red Bull clearly hit the ground running back again. They've been holding a lot in reserve over pre-season testing and the practice sessions, and they've come out of the blocks firing on all cylinders, and other cliches. And Max Verstappen, takes pole by nearly 1.5 tenths. Tom, it's kind of one of those things you just get out of a team that's on a roll. They've clearly walked into Bahrain and they've just smashed it.
I mean, they very much sort of continued where they left off at the tail end of last season. But it doesn't paint a sort of accurate picture or it doesn't so much sort of tell the whole story of qualifying. Because while some people may look at it and go, oh, God, it's Red Bull 1-2, here we go. Max is 3 tenths ahead of his teammate or whatever he was. You know, normal service is resumed. It wasn't plain sailing for them. You know, they did get caught out by the red flag in Q1 thanks to Leclerc's car deciding to go and wait watches around the first lap. And just shedding bits left, right, and center. But it took a while for the Red Bull to actually sort of spark into life. And it was only in Q3 where Max was in that first lap, right? I think he put in a 1:28.9 or something that car really came alive, and then it was like someone that had sort of awoken the beast inside of him. And then obviously on his second flying lap, his first sector was actually I think it was almost 2 tenths down, but he then went purple in sector 2 and 3, and then did a 1:28.7, I believe, for his final flying lap, and then Perez went quicker again. It was interesting. Ferrari said they didn't feel they could compete for pole, and they opted to save a set of tyres as well, so that says a lot about the Red Bull pace. I mean, obviously, as a Red Bull fan and a Max fan, I'm happy to see them 1-2, but it's closer than you think.
Yeah, it's only 1.5 tenths between obviously the Perez's Red Bull and Leclerc's Ferrari. Is it progress, do you think, that Perez is actually qualifying within 1.5 tenths of Max for once, when he was sort of 2 or 3 tenths off of Max last season when they were next to each other on the grid?
You probably could say that. I think it's also down to the fact that Sergio might be more comfortable with the car than he was last year, which was a massive step forward from 2021. In the greatest of respects to him, I don't think we really expected him to be faster than Max today. He was quicker in FP1 yesterday, which is not really a reflection on the weekend. It's that's purely testing purposes. But he did what he had to do. He split the gap between Verstappen and Leclerc. It's only race one, so I really hope that because as a personal fan of Checo myself, I have to say, I would love to see him get in the mix tomorrow, and I really hope he can. Whether that will be allowed without wishing to be controversial is another matter of discussion. But time will tell. And coming back down to earth on the Saturday, 1-2 for Red Bull, fantastic for them. Although it's not quite, as Tom mentioned, it's not quite as far, the gap is not quite as big as we initially expected.
Yeah, I don't think it's controversial to say that Red Bull clearly have a strict hierarchy. I mean, I'd say a lot of that comes down to talent, because Max Verstappen is one of those people who can extract the ultimate of the maximum potential of the car over one lap, whereas, with the greatest respect, I don't think Perez can. And then next, we go two by two down to the Ferraris with Charles Leclerc, as Tom mentioned, bringing out the first red flag of the session without even crashing, which is mental, losing a piece of his car jumpers. He comes in third with an exactly 90-second lap around Bahrain, which I think is quite impressive in some ways. Do you think, obviously, with the strategy struggles that they'll have or have had, that with that extra set of tyres they decided to save, they'll be able to mix it up there?
You never know. We'll only be able to see when it comes to the race. Obviously, it'll be a test of the new strategist on the pit wall as well. Of course, they announced that Iñaki Rueda would be consigned to factory duties over the winter or during testing, and Ravin Jain will take up the pit wall duty. So it's kind of like the first acid test for them, because it was such a heavy point of scrutiny last season, and for good reason as well. Leclerc did seem a bit disappointed there at the end that they couldn't go out and do another run, because he felt like there was a little bit left in the tank, which, you know, was a little bit surprising considering how they started qualifying. And, you know, even all weekend, they just didn't look to be as, you know, flashy as, say, the Aston Martin was or the Red Bull. So, you know, for them to be as close as they are in qualifying today, good news, you know. And, yeah, the race pace will be a different story. And I think having that option of starting on the soft tyre as well, try and get ahead of the Red Bulls at the start and see where that goes. You know, they just have to try different things and to actually be proactive rather than reactive, and, you know, just be a bit more smart in general about their strategies this season, because, yeah, that's the only way they're going to actually be able to mix it in terms of the championship.
Yeah, 100%. You can't win a championship with a slow car, but you can absolutely lose one with a fast car. Carlos Sainz, who comes in, who did do a final run in qualifying. Tom, he lines up obviously directly behind Leclerc. Do you think that sort of that run was worth it? Because I think it's now split the strategies for. Split the strategies for the Ferrari, or is that sort of a pincer approach that they can utilize?
I think Ferrari will definitely be able to sacrifice signs to benefit Leclerc, and like you said about Red Bull, you know, every team does have a number one, you know, whether it's enforced or not. You know, Ferrari have a strict hierarchy, which is, you know, Leclerc is the best driver. And you know, sort of deservedly so. I get why Sainz wanted to go out for another run, especially as he didn't seem to quite get a solid lap together. You know, the Ferrari, you know, he just had a couple of elements of oversteer on, you know, sort of, you know, coming through turn five and six, you know, or working, you know, coming out of turn four into the second sector. He had snaps of oversteer. He bottomed out over one of the curbs. Most of his laps were just quite scruffy. And I'm just, yeah, I think for him, it was probably as much a sort of thing of like, you know, I want to give it another go because I've never got more pace in it. Or I know I can hit my lines a bit better. Or, you know, the car can not, you know, drag me over the curb or something like that. It's going to be an interesting approach that he takes tomorrow. You know, whether he starts on a set of softs and goes aggressive, I don't know. I doubt it. I'd imagine he'll probably start on the mediums, and Leclerc might start on a fresh set of softs to try and get the jump. And then Sainz has got to try and, you know, do his best, you know, like Perez or Bottas impression, to try and hold off people who are coming around. I think it might all be in vain because in race trim, I think the Red Bulls are going to have to measure the Ferrari and possibly the Aston Martins as well, which is not something I thought I'd say. But yeah, I get why you went out, but I just don't think the Ferrari has the pace that they were hoping. And it might be a bit of a kick in the teeth for them, given where they were this time last year. You know, obviously when they came flying out the blocks and stormed to pole and a 1-2 in the race, you know, helped by Red Bull powertrains going on strike. But yeah, it was, yeah. We'll see what Sainz does tomorrow, but I'm not holding out much hope for him.
Yeah, it seems like the more exciting driver from Spain will be, I can't believe I'm saying this, Fernando Alonso, who has seemed to have pulled the move of the century, going from a, you know, a sort of middling Alpine up to what appears to be a rocket ship in the form of the Aston Martin, Alex.
Well, for once, he seems to have got it right, hasn't he, after a decade or so of making the wrong decisions when it comes to team moves. But that was the story that really got our attention, wasn't it, over the weekend, the pace of the Aston Martin. As Fernando Alonso has once said, you don't get any points on a Saturday. It's all about the race. We wait to see how competitive the Aston Martin will be on race day with in comparison to the Ferrari. I don't believe that they really have the pace to challenge Red Bull. But a podium with for Fernando Alonso, so I don't think is out of the question. The two Aston Martins are in the top 10 with Stroll in P8 as well. The future's bright, the future's orange for them.
Yeah, the race runs, I believe, in practice were particularly impressive. I think that's the thing that's put the alarm bells for everyone else who were near them. They thought they thought Lawrence Stroll was a sort of an ego driven kick, and apparently it's now the recruitment has started to work, and the changes they've made have really sort of put them going forward. By comparison, the Mercedes. Sort of slightly jubilant, Jawad, but a little off the pace. Russell in sixth, and then we've got Hamilton in seventh.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise coming into this year that Mercedes haven't really made the kind of gains that I was expecting over the off-season, very much sticking to that concept of the side pods that they designed last year, the zero pods, or if you want to call them the 0.5 pods this year, because they are slightly bigger, but for them to be eclipsed by essentially what is a customer team in Aston Martin using the Mercedes engine as well doesn't look the greatest. George Russell, I guess, getting the most out of what he could with that car in sixth. He was second quickest at the end of Q1 when we had that frantic little group that was covered by, I think, like 4 or 5 tenths or whatever. But, definitely not really in any kind of contention this weekend as they stand Mercedes. And you can see that with the way, Lewis Hamilton certainly has been in talking and whatnot. So, yeah, you know, I'm sure George, who was consistent last year with his top five finishes at the start of the year, could see him probably get up there. But, I guess sixth is a reflection of how they stand in terms of qualifying at the moment.
Yeah, I have no doubt, though, that bearing in mind that they spent so long last year fixing the obviously inherent flaws in the car when it came to the porpoising issue, and they came back to challenge for and get race wins. A race win. I imagine that it's no surprise to me. I wouldn't be surprised if Mercedes put the things in place to get themselves a race win by the end of the season. We'll be wondering why we ever doubted them. We got Lewis Hamilton in seventh. Tom, I thought it was less interesting the performance. I think the performance is very Lewis Hamilton. He's a little off the pace, obviously, but Toto Wolff coming out and saying that the Mercedes is going to work hard to get him an eighth championship as a stated aim.
Yeah, all right, Toto, whatever you say, hon. That bit aside, because I think that's just Toto doing wishful thinking. Although Hamilton was, P7, he wasn't that far off the pace. He did a 130.3, and bear in mind, Paul was a 129.7. So not a 128.7, which I think I said earlier, my bad. He's 6-7 tenths off the pace, and you know that's down in P7. It goes to show how close the top 10 are, or you know what's well, certainly the top 7, because like I say, he's P7. He was still going purple in, you know, in sectors here and there. Then, you know, yes, sometimes, you know, he was then losing those sectors. The track was rubbering in, you know, that all that good stuff. It's, you know, it's not a bad showing by any stretch. And, you know, the Merc looks okay, you know, because the F1 put up a graphic comparing where, where Hamilton was faster and where Max was faster at certain points. Now, how much you trust that is up to you, because obviously, you know, because obviously the F1 Insights brought to you by AWS are, you know, sometimes a bit questionable, you know, where they say, like, you've got 10% tire left, and then the driver's saying, no, tire's good, mate. It's like, come on, stop messing about. So how much you trust that is up to you. But I think the Merc looks good, and you know, the engine looks like it's got a fair bit of shove. It just doesn't look like it's handling that well in the corners, especially compared to the Red Bull. That Red Bull just looks so sorted. Now, I would say that because I'm a Red Bull fan, but yeah, I'm just not 100% that the Merc can quite hold the pace. Given that obviously Russell and Hamilton were running different setups in practice as well, because they were running different wings and all sorts to test for setup issues, all the rest of it, because both drivers were reporting setup imbalance and all the rest of it. He's like four thousandths off his teammate or something, or 400ths off his teammate. It's not much at all. And let's not forget, his teammate is a damn good driver. So if anybody's writing off Hamilton, me included, do that at your own peril, because there's a reason that he holds all the accolades he does. Whether he'll get that 8th World Championship, I don't think it's going to be in this car. I think Mercedes will probably finish 4th in the Constructors if this weekend is anything to go off of. There'll be some tracks where they'll go better. It's like, I wonder if they might go fairly well around Austria, for example. But, I don't know. We'll see. Let's find out. And I'm just here for the memes.
I was going to say, once you've been around Formula One long enough, you know the issues that can be had when you try and predict a season off one qualifying session. If we point to, you know, Yuki Tsunoda in 2020, for example. 2021. I apologize. So moving down, we have a genuine surprise, and not just because the car's fast and is slightly. It's more surprisingly fast than we thought it was going to be. We have Lance Stroll, who I am amazed is in the car, especially based off his performances on Friday, Alex. It's kind of astounding to see him there, isn't it?
Yeah, got to give the guy credit. He's come back from his injury, and he's done well to get it in the top 10. I must admit, hold my hands up, I was disappointed to not see Filipe Drugovich get an opportunity, purely on the basis that I fear, for his sake, that probably would have been his one and only opportunity, given the fact that he's gone to Aston Martin as a reserve driver, and you've got Alonso and Stroll there, who look pretty tied into their own contracts. But that's going off on a tangent. Lance Stroll did really well to get into the top 10, and he's come back with a vengeance, and he wants to start the season as a means to go on, and fair play to him.
Yeah, I personally think it's a little bit too early. I guess time will tell whether Lance Stroll should be in the car. I can imagine over a race distance that's going to be quite difficult, but. Well,
Sorry to interrupt. While the qualifying was on, I did read something about Lance complaining about how much pain he was in. So, my own view is that, and with you, Owen, I think it probably is. I think he should have sat out this one race and then come back for Saudi Arabia just to allow his injuries to recover properly. Not just because I wanted to see Drugovic get his opportunity, I just think more for Lance's sake, because it sounds like over one lap it's okay, but I think over the race distance, we'll see how he is. I wouldn't be surprised to see him struggle in the race tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's probably where what's going to happen is we'll see a good maybe 5-10 laps, and then we'll start to see the issues happening. But I mean, he's been put through by the doctors, so I guess it's up to them. He may well have the best physio on planet Earth, in which case, you know, I guess we'll all have our go on our faces at that one. We then have Ocon, who is the highest place of the Alpines, Jared. Do you see them going forwards from this position, or is this sort of the height of where they can get to, do you think?
Well, given that they were regarded as the slowest team in testing, having not really set those kind of Hollywood lap times, and not really impressing through the weekend so far, I think, yeah, they'd be pretty much, I don't know if they'd be content, but yeah, we shouldn't really expect any more than bottom half of the top 10. And like you say, if Stroll hits trouble tomorrow just on physical limitation alone, then yeah, you know, there's another position for him up there. But first of all, I guess it is great effort from him anyway to be in the top 10 when you consider how his teammate fared through the session. But yeah, you know, for the fourth fastest team last year, it is a bit disappointing to see him. You know, not as disappointing as other teams that we're going to get to shortly, but for them to, yeah, kind of slip behind and kind of be nowhere at the moment, really, it's a bit disappointing. But, you know, Ocon did what he needed to, got the car into Q3. It's a solid platform. See what happens tomorrow. I don't think they'll go too far forward. But if he can stay out of trouble, you know, at least he doesn't have a teammate to crash into in the top 10. So that's something.
Yeah. But given that there's sort of no love lost apparently between Gasly and Ocon, yeah, maybe the fact that he's sitting all the way down in 20th, which we'll get onto later, you know, might be a blessing. Just one position behind, running out of the top 10, we have Nico Hülkenberg, who has, I think, done a kind of amazing job to put his car in 10th place. Didn't set a lap time or a competitive lap time that he in Q3, Tom. But can he get that podium? That's the real question. Can he get that podium from 10th place, assuming everything goes wrong?
Oh, do we really have to go over this?
I mean, no, but it's an inflammatory statement. So
Hülkenberg in that flipping neck podium. Oh, the life. Yeah, no, he can't. No, it's not going to happen. And if he does, I'll shave my head, which could be a really awkward podcast next week.
Well, hold it to that.
Yeah, well, especially as I only had my haircut the other day after 3 months. So, yeah, you know, I'd rather not. But hey ho. There we are. It's said now. There's my first bet for the season. I don't think he'll get a podium because there are too many good cars in front of him. I do think it was a very good Saturday from him, though, especially given where his teammate qualified. And given I was one of Hulk's critics of when he was announced as coming back, I'm eating my words right now because he did an absolutely brilliant job in that Haas. He looked really comfortable. He got it into Q3, got his time deleted, which was, you know, unlucky, but. You know, it's his first full-time drive in F1 since 2019. Granted, he did race here last year in the Aston Martin, but he partly wishes it was this season. But it was a very, very, very good showing from him. And I think it's safe to say that there's life in the old dog yet with Hülkenberg. I would say he didn't put a foot wrong. He did because he got a lap time deleted, but they were really, really ferociously hot on track limits today. And quite a few drivers fell foul of it, and rightly so. Hülkenberg, I think he's on for a points finish tomorrow. And that's what Haas brought him in for, because they know that they're going to get a solid result out of him. They know they're going to get a podium out of him. But they know that they're going to get, you know, for the most part, you know, solid points finishes. And I'm actually, I'm pleasantly surprised with him in a good way.
Yeah. I think just moving on to the 11th place, someone else who'd be sort of pleasantly surprised with where he's actually ended up, Alex, is Lando Norris, because it was a, going through pre-season testing and with, we're kind of thinking the McLaren looks like a bit of a dog. It's, with its e-ink display advertisements and things like that, we thought they might have spent the money in the wrong places. But, it's, would you say 11th place is kind of the best of the car, or is it kind of, is it just a sort of on the up, and they managed to find something in the last practice session?
I would completely agree with you in the sense that P11 was a pleasant surprise for McLaren, because I was fearing that both cars would be out in Q1, given the fact that they launched the car and the first thing Zak Brown said was that we've missed our targets. That's not a good sign. And as any Formula 1 fan will know, testing has not been a bed of roses for them. So to see Lando Norris 11th, just missing out on Q3, was quite a surprise. But they have got a lot of trouble on their hands, and we'll see what the race has to bring for them. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done there, that's for sure.
Yeah, they have a bit of a mountain to climb. It's long gone are the days of the leading the Russian Grand Prix a few years ago. By comparison, speaking of long gone, we've got Valtteri Bottas in the Sauber. Obviously, once a Mercedes driver, it doesn't seem that Sauber have taken that step forward, does it, Jawad? From the, by the looks of this qualifying session,
not at all. Though they were mixing it in the top 10 early on in Q1 and Q2, but ultimately, I guess everyone turns up their engines and whatnot, so they were naturally going to fall behind, but still, I think, 12th and 13th for both Bottas and Joe is quite good for where they are. Bottas made it a knack last year of getting points where he could and some impressive finishes early on in the season to give him that edge over Aston Martin. But obviously Aston Martin has made that big step forward this year. So Alfa Romeo, whoever they're going to be fighting in the Constructors' Championship, whether it be Haas and McLaren and whatnot, they seem like they're in a good position. And, we see just, solid reliability from Bottas as a driver. So hopefully he can make some inroads tomorrow. The power of the mullet, he's going to, and the mustache, he's going to embrace it and just move forwards. I wish he kept that helmet, though, for the season too. That was quite fun.
Yeah. Does he get honorary Australian kind of status now with the mullet?
I'd give it to him. He's only like a few tattoos and whatnot away from being a proper bogan, so why not?
Oh, gosh. yeah. I'll let you say that, not me. In 13th place, we've got much closer to his teammate than he was last year. We've got Guan Yu Zhou, Tom.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, I didn't see anything of the Alfa Sauber Romeo E's, whatever they're
it's
called
one of
this
them.
Year. Yeah, the insert Swiss team name here. Should we call them BMW, or is that too soon?
No, it's too late.
Too late, oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, about two decades too late. I've got to be honest, I didn't see anything of the Alphas. I saw that they were knocking on the door of Q3, but unfortunately Bottas nudged out Zhou, and then obviously Bottas got nudged out himself. I don't really know what else to say, because I didn't see them. They're probably about where they should be in a very, very, very tightly contested field. They could be right in the mix tomorrow. If there's a bit of shenanigans, shall we say, in front of them going into turn one, they could just loop around the outside, or they could be involved in said shenanigans. They're in that sort of like almost slightly precarious position where they could get shunted from behind by someone, missing their braking point. They could miss their braking points themselves and go steaming into someone in front of them. So, I really don't know which way it's going to go for them. I've got not much more to add. You know, decent result, you know, especially if you look at where Alfa Romeo were in 2021, for example, and 2020, you know, they're pretty dire. The main thing I'd say is I hope they don't tail off the season like they did last season. Because last season they started really well. You know, Bottas finished, he finished ahead of Hamilton, I think, or certainly out-qualified him or something, and then finished in the points. I hope they don't have a strong start and then tail off again. I hope they can sort of maintain some consistency throughout the year, this year.
Yeah, it would. It'd be. It hates to see them go backwards both here and in the championship at large. Sort of moving from someone that we didn't see a lot of to someone I don't think I actually saw at all, which is a testament to how competitive it was up at the front. But we've got Yuki Tsunoda, Alex. I don't think I saw anything of him. It's probably a good thing, bearing in mind his performances in the last couple of years. It's a weird step back for the Alpha, though, isn't it?
The AlphaTauri.
Sorry, yeah, the AlphaTauri, I should have specified.
Well, they had a pretty poor season last year, didn't they, compared to, they had the victory in 2020 and they had a pretty strong season in 2021. Last year, they had a poor season. Somebody actually asked me this week, who do you think a driver is under pressure a lot this year? And for me, it's actually Yuki Tsunoda, because it was the arrival of Nyck de Vries, who I rated as quite a very talented driver. Would have put pressure on him. But first of all, to Tsunoda, he's qualified 14th, he got out of Q1. But I'm disappointed with the pace of the AlphaTauri. I didn't expect them to be as far down as they did, if truth be told. We'll see if that's a yardstick for the season or if it's just a bad day at the office. But I wouldn't really want to be in the post-qualifying debrief of that team at the moment. I don't think it was as I was expecting.
Yeah, I think it's kind of bad that Tsunoda is the best of that, as we're getting onto it in a little bit later. Alex Albon now in 15th. Jared, he's also not set a time. I don't remember whether that was a lap time deletion, but it's got to be an improvement for the Williams, bearing in mind that they're, you know, 15th and 16th.
Yeah, and that car just looks horrible to drive. Just remember seeing Albon going off at the S's with so much understeer, and even Martin Brundle was saying it at the time too. So, so there you go. He damaged his front wing and didn't set a lap, but I feel like he did get a lap time. No, he didn't. It was marginal, we were saying in the chat, I remember now. So, yeah, it just seems like a handful of a car to be driving at the moment, but Albon doing Albon things, you know, gets it out of Q1 and whatnot. So, you know, we'll see that from him all year, I suppose, and it'll just be like last year where, you know, they'll have to pull off some wild strategy, go to the final lap before making a pit stop, for example, to get in the points and whatnot. But, you know, Albon, his ability, his talent, not in question here. It's just the car that's going to be, you know, going beyond its limits to actually deliver both the Williams drivers some results this season.
Yeah, and I think it's looking like a good season for them. Bearing in mind that we've, you know, out of the limelight, Logan Sargeant, Tom, has done better than both Piastri and Nyck de Vries, come in with quite, you know, relatively little fanfare as the United States' most recent driver since, I think, Alexander Rossi, I think. And the first full-time seat since Scott Speed. a long, long time ago. We have, Logan Sargeant in 16th place. It's kind of astounding that he's actually managed it in the Williams, is it not?
Yeah, I was very, very impressed and surprised with Logan Sargeant, because I didn't think he would do much, if anything, really, this season. You know, I didn't think the Williams would really be anywhere. How I was mistaken. He's, bear in mind, he set an identical lap time to Lando Norris down to 0.000. So you know, that's, you know, Norris is a man who's, you know, 1920, he's entering his, what, his fifth season of Formula One, joined in 2019. So he's, Norris is someone who's been around the block now a fair bit in F1. And, you know, he's got podiums and a pole position, you know, and, you know, could have, would have, should have had a race win as well. Granted, the McLaren is woeful this season. But, you know, the Williams has been fantastic. And Logan Sargeant has just, he's just come in. He's not made too much of a song, you know, he's not made too much of a sort of hoo-ha or a fanfare, as you said. He's just come in, he's just got in the car, he's just got on with the job. And he's doing his talking on track. And granted, we're one qualifying session into what, a 22 race calendar season, even if I can actually get my words out right. I'm struggling to human today. He's showing that he deserves his place in F1. Like I said, it's only one qualifying session, but he's already showing more signs, you could say, than Latifi ever showed in the car. And I know that's not much of a comparison, because that's like saying which eye do you want to be poked in. But he's doing well, and I'm really impressed. And he could have easily been, well, I say easy, you know, he was really on the cusp of Q2. But for his first outing in a Williams, that's impressive.
Yeah, he was literally on the cusp of it. Like, you know, he's probably kicking himself, unfortunately, thinking, you know, if I'd straightened the wheel slightly earlier there, got on the power slightly earlier there, or braked that tiny bit later, I'd be in Q2, possibly even higher up the field. But yeah, absolutely amazing start to the season. Now, unfortunately, we have got into the portion of the results, I think, where just because, you know, I have to praise F1. And the FIA for these new regulations, the cost cap regulations, the aero testing regulations, because they're the only reason that I can see that the grid is closed up to the point where, if we go, I know, think they were holding things back, but you know, Verstappen, you know, the entire field were covered by something like 1.3 seconds in Q1. And unfortunately, these four drivers that we're going to go through now are the victims of that, because it's so close. We've got Kevin Magnussen, Alex, who is obviously a seasoned driver. It doesn't look great for him here, but would you say it's sort of a disappointing performance from him, or is it as I'm alluding to, just because it's so competitive at this point of the field?
I think it is more leaning towards that the fact that the gap has closed, and it is very close. Because sadly for Kevin Magnussen, that is probably the kind of, for the most disappointing performance of the session, really, because considering where his teammate is and where he was last year after he'd not been in the car for over a year. I don't think when he woke up this morning, he was really expected to be down in P17. But as we've touched on a couple of times already, it's only qualifying. It can because the gap in the midfield has closed a lot. The potential for points is there. He just needs to keep out of trouble in the opening laps. And I don't think all is lost for him. It's a bad day, but there's room for improvement for him.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, we hope that changes, and you know, Kevin's a good racer, so you know, he could easily go forward. Now I sort of talked about him before. Piastri, obviously in the limelight a lot of last season, and I think you can maybe kind of excuse his performance a little bit just based on the fact that he's had a year out the car. 18th place, Jared. Bearing in mind that the seat that he would have been in had things gone the way Alpine wanted them is behind him by two places. It's not the worst thing in the world, but it's not what we expected, even with the McLaren being so poor, apparently.
No, and he, just reading some quotes that he had after qualifying, he was quite self-critical of his own performance, saying that it wasn't a great session. Firstly, like his first run was affected by that red flag early on, but then stayed on the same set of tires or something after that. And then the second set, he said he just didn't do a good enough job. He made a mistake into turn two, and then the rest of the lap was quite scrappy. So, I mean, like, it's good that he's identified that, yeah, you know, these are the mistakes he's made and being self-critical and whatnot. But, you know, at the same time, if this becomes a regular thing, then that's when you start asking questions, because you can't have that in Formula One, unfortunately. And as we know by from his predecessor as well, you know, one too many mistakes and you're on the outer. So yeah, even though he's a rookie and there was a lot of publicity and a lot of scrutiny because of the events of last year with the contract saga, he has kind of come into this year as the one with the biggest point to prove, in my opinion, which, you know, as much as, you know, I want to say I'm a fan of his, yeah, I'd like to see him succeed and whatnot, because, you know, you don't win F2 and F3 in your first year of asking and not be talented. You know, people comparing him to the likes of, you know, George Russell and that really good crop of F2 drivers that we had come into F1 a few years ago now. But yeah, good on him for identifying, you know, where he went wrong. Yes, the car is a bit of a dog at the moment, so there's only room for improvement, and, you know, tomorrow will be the big test for him, his first ever Grand Prix, and seeing how he copes with the pressure being at the back of the grid, of course, and with a whole different set of drivers than what he's used to. And, you know, not having raced either for more than 12 months, like you said, with having the year off last year, not having anything to do in that reserve driver role. So, you know, I got to say, I didn't expect worse, and I didn't expect better for his first qualifying. I thought that he would be a Q1 casualty. Didn't wish it for be too true. Wish it be true, but yeah, that's kind of the way it goes. And, you know, I'm glad he's kind of put his hand up and said, yeah, you know, there was things that I did wrong as well on in that first attempt.
Yeah. Yeah, just for his sake, he needs to, in the next few qualifying sessions, I think he needs to hope that he can get a bit further up, because otherwise it's going to look like a bust for his move into Formula One. Now, this driver, I didn't see anything from him in the qualifying session, you know, and it's, but you know, he's obviously a you know, it's arguably debatable whether he's even a rookie at this point, but seeing as he scored points. But Nyck de Vries in 19th place, kind of weird that he's so far down. Obviously, he comes in as a world champion in Formula E, but, you know, quite far off the pace from his from his teammate. Do you reckon that's due to, you know, I'm not even going to ask the question. I think that's probably due to a new car, Tom. Where can you see him getting to in the race from this position?
I think once Ocon's Alpine blows up, that'll give him a net gain of one position. He has shown some good race craft, and like you said, he is getting used to a new car. You know, and it's not just, you know, it's not just a case of, you know, a different constructor. It's a different engine supplier and everything. And bearing in mind the last time that he drove in a competitive setting, an F1 car was September last year in Monza. I know he's done pre-season testing and stuff, but there's only so much you can simulate. And yes, you can do race runs and quali laps, you know, in practice and in testing until the cars come home, but nothing can simulate the pressure that you feel on your shoulders and mentally when you enter a session, you know, whether it's qualifying or the race. And it's like, there's only so much preparation you can do for sitting there and watching those five lights go. And then, you know, then releasing phase one of the clutch and phase two of the clutch. You can do all the practice starts you want, but you know, he's got more to offer. And yeah, it's not a great qualifying session, but at least he's not last. So take from that what you will. He's just, yeah, I think he will come good as the season comes on, especially once he gets a bit more sort of settled into the car and settled into the routine of regularly sort of flying around with F1, because I know he's done it with you know, he was in GP3 in 2016, and you know, he was in F2, obviously won F2, and then, you know, he's been a Formula E. They don't have the following that F1 has. There's a reason that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsport, well, of open wheel, single seater motorsport. So there is increased pressure that comes with that. Plus, there is also increased pressure that comes with being in a Red Bull setup. You know, you just look at the likes of Danny Kvyat, Danny Rick, Albon, Gasly, you know, they've all come and gone. Well, I mean, Danny Rick's come back, but he's not a racing driver. You know, he's a media horse now. Sorry, Jared. You know, you know, it's just, it's a very, very pressured environment. And you know, some drivers make it, some drivers don't. And I think De Vries has got it in him. I said this during Monza last year, because I was on one of the shows for Monza last year. Monza is an easy circuit to look good at. I said back then that if we'd have seen him in Singapore, it would have been a better representation. And I think everybody's got a bit mad hyped about De Vries. And I said this at the time, because he got points in a Williams, which, you know, was good. Don't get me wrong, but it was just a flat out circuit. I think he might have had a bit of a reality check today, and I hope tomorrow that he can at least work his way up the field.
Yeah, we got to hope that he doesn't sort of do a Yuki Tsunoda from when he started and look great in testing, and then sort of have a bit of an issue. But he's really starting on the back foot here. Now we come to the last sort of ignominy of the last place. We have Pierre Gasly, and it doesn't look like a good start to his career at Alpine in the sort of French Revolution that we've been promised. Alex, now I don't know why he's not that far off. He's only 0.6 off De Vries, and obviously, bear in mind as I've said, you know, the field is so clustered at that point that it was sort of a surprise. But it's not a great start, and it's not a great look really for him to be in 20th place, is it?
Well, he had a time deleted, I think, and that's why he's down in P20. But yeah, regardless, that's not where Alpine wants to be. It's not where Gasly wants to be on his debut with a new team. Considering where Ocon is on the grid, that's because. I don't think it's as bad as it's made out, but there is a rivalry in terms amongst the teammates there, and that gives Ocon, you know, first blood. That's a phrase I've used already, but never mind. So yeah, Gasly will want to forget this one and move on quickly. But it's only qualifying for the first race, as we've already said. Anything can happen in the race tomorrow. I'm pretty sure with the Alpine can last the distance. He won't finish last. He's qualified last, but I don't think he'll certainly finish last if the Alpine makes it that far. The only way is up.
Yeah, I mean, you can't lose positions from 20th. It's all they can do, really. We get into the sort of fun part where we start predicting where. People, you know, predicting the top three. I will start with you, Jared. Where do you? What do you? What's your top three?
Let's go. Verstappen for the win. Leclerc second, and Bargaret Alonso gets on the podium. P3.
Barry Alonso 2012. That always being on the podium.
Yeah.
Tom, where do you see it playing out?
I think we'll see Max win. I think we'll see Alonso P2 and Leclerc P3.
And Alex?
Yeah, I can't really see past Verstappen victory unless he gets taken out in the first corner or the my seat of the machinery at Red Bull, which I'm I think is pretty unlikely. So I'll go for a Verstappen win. It's pretty boring, but I think Perez will probably be P2 and I'll go Alonso P3.
Oh, interesting. Not seeing the Ferraris go forward at all. Mind you, I don't see anything similar. I've seen similar. I'm thinking, just for variety, I'm going to go, well, I've got to go for Verstappen for the win. I think the Red Bull's too strong. And I'm going to go, Alonso P2 and then Sainz P3. If only just because I just think that I don't think Ferrari's strategy is going to come off on that. Even with that extra set of softs, I think they'll get put too far behind by a stop if they try and go for that. So we go bold predictions? I'm going to go with bold predictions there, Jared.
It's not very bold, but it could be bold. Hülkenberg, top five.
Oh, interesting. Tom?
K-Mag in the points.
Oh, interesting. And Alex?
Logan Sargeant to get a point in his debut.
Oh, I can see that. I can see that. Right. Bold prediction from me. I'm going to go Mercedes for the win. I don't think they've got the pace for it, but they might do it. They'll strategize their way through it. They'll regain the ability to do good strategies like they used to have. They sort of missed it last year. Right. So thank you all for coming on. So it's only fair that we find out where we can hear more of you. Gerald, I'll start with you. Where can we find you?
Yeah, so apart from guesting on this wonderful show with all you wonderful people, I have Hit the Apex podcast, which you can find on all the good podcast platforms. So back for another season of that. I also write for a website called The Raw, so I live blog every Formula One race if I'm up for them. But this is my 10th season that I'm doing live blogs for that website for F1. So yeah, that seems like a long time, but I still love it, getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, and there's the Twitter page at Hit the Apex Media and a link tree with all various links and whatnot as well. So
excellent. You can make sure you give that a listen. Alex, are you doing any writing or?
No.
No. I get it. I did it for a time where I was just like, oh, this is hard.
No, I'm just happy making appearances on the brilliant podcast that we do. And it's great talking about the sport that we all love amongst my fellow colleagues when we all share this love of this wonderful sport. And it's great to come and talk about it once in a while.
Awesome. Sorry, I really feel like I've put a spotlight on you that you didn't want there. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
And of course, there is Tom.
Yes. So, alongside co-hosting this delightful podcast, along people like yourself, I also do a sports come other motor racing series podcast with one of our panelist members, Sophia. So she and I do the Formula Talk podcast where we cover F2, F3, the new F1 Academy, which we've just started. So we just started doing bits on because obviously a lot more information has just come out. And then we're also covering things like Frecca, and we're going to start looking at IndyCar as well. That goes out weekly. We record it in the week. The day of the week we record it on depends if it's a full moon or not, because it just depends on work schedules, etc. But that's really beginning to take off, and I'm really enjoying doing that with her as well. So yeah, so that can be found on all the F1 Chronicle channels. It's a sister podcast to this one, to Grid Talk.
Yes, and if you'd like to listen to more Grid Talk, we'd love it if you would. Grid Talk is available on YouTube, where most of our episodes, including this one, are recorded live, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, and Pocket Cast. Just search Formula One Grid Talk for our back catalogue of shows with previews and reactions to qualifying and race results. Please consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get mics, lights, and better recording equipment for our presenters. Also, make sure you subscribe so you're the first to know when each new weekly episode is released. We will be back soon with plenty of more F1 content. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.